Hey, Mark, I was listening to Paramore the other day, and it really made me think about the amygdala and the limbic system.
You just made those words up, didn't you?
What, Paramore?
We're the Nevermind the Music podcast, where one musician
and one psychologist
talk songwriting and the mind, one song at a time.
We'll hear everything from Green Day and Outkast
to Stevie Wonder and Dua Lipa.
And we mostly try to stay on topic.
Except for when we don't want to.
Nevermind the Music, wherever you get your podcasts.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Welcome to the Lorehounds Play. We're the Lorehounds, your guides to pixel-based adventures. I'm John.
I'm Brandon, and this is our podcast for the video game The Last of Us, Part 1.
What the hell did you do with David?
Oh, David, I'm trying to think of something that's not too dark from the game that would be a good tie-in joke. Nope, can't think of one.
You sent him to Jackson.
There we go. That's perfect. Yeah.
All right. In this episode, we'll be discussing the production background of the game, our spoiler-free thoughts on the experience, and a breakdown of the characters, plot, and gameplay of Naughty Dog's The Last of Us Part 1.
Before we get started, quick reminder that you can send feedback to lorehounds@thelorehounds.com or leave us a voicemail at thelorehounds.com/contact, and we'll get to those questions in the next episode.
If you're enjoying our coverage of video games or any of the shows we're covering and you'd like to support us directly, head over to patreon.com/thelorehounds and subscribe today for early and ad-free access to every episode. Of course, you can always find our ad-supported episodes on our public feed. Just search for The Lorehounds in your podcast application of choice or use the fancy subscription tool at thelorehounds.com.
Another quick ask, please take a moment to rate our podcast and leave a review if you feel so moved. Ratings and reviews help other people find the podcast, which helps us make more podcasts like this one.
This month, we're covering The Last of Us on HBO, The Mandalorian on Disney Plus, and Ted Lasso on Apple TV Plus, but we'll get more into that in the outro. Brandon, before we get started on The Last of Us, this is a new thing, so why don't we discuss what we're doing here?
Yes. So every once in a while, we're going to be playing a video game and talking about it. I guess that's the quickest and easiest way to boil it down.
That's a good pitch.
We're going to be talking about mostly story video games. I think that fits along with the Lorehounds, just getting into story and backgrounds of the games themselves. A lot of the times, these are going to be games that are meant to move you. So, story, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. And who are you, Brandon? Because this is the first time you've been on our airwaves, though you've been on the airwaves.
Yes, I am a generalist nerd. I like stories. My Twitter bio, I think, is a pretty good way to describe me here. I'm a story enthusiast, a podcaster, a D&D lover, and an actual bard. I'm married with children, and I have a Destiny podcast.
Good for you.
Yeah. That's pretty much me. I'm a podcast addict by nature. My job allows me a lot of time alone that I have just people talking in my AirPods all the time. And I kind of always have.
You know, you glossed over it, but you do host a Destiny podcast, Destiny the Video Game. So can you talk a little bit about that and where to find you?
Yes. Big time in Destiny right now. They just had an expansion drop. It is a first-person shooter, massive multiplayer online game. So there's always something new and something interesting to talk about. I talk about that with my co-host, Brozilla Firefox, aka Matt. You can find us pretty much on all the main podcast players of your choosing at Time to Explain. It's the name of the podcast.
If you can't decide if you want to play Halo or World of Warcraft, there's your game. So hop onto Brandon's podcast and he'll tell you more.
Yes, we will explain what they didn't have time to explain.
Excellent. All right, Brandon, before we go into the background of this game, if somebody has not played the game before, Can you give the brief description of what the game is, what the basic premise is, and what the type of game it is?
Read from the Wikipedia, The Last of Us is a 2013 action-adventure game developed by Naughty Dog and published by Sony Computer Entertainment. Players control Joel, a smuggler tasked with escorting a teenage girl, Ellie, across a post-apocalyptic United States. The Last of Us is played from a third-person perspective. Players use firearms and improvised weapons and can use stealth to defend against hostile humans and cannibalistic creatures infected by a mutated fungus.
That's a pretty good synopsis from Wikipedia, I gotta say.
Thank you. People love Wikipedia.
It's true. It's good for what it is, you know? If you know the information already, it's good to get a synopsis of what you already know. And that's what we've done here. So I promise those things were true.
The collective unconsciousness of the human race, Wikipedia.
So before we go into our non-spoiler thoughts about this, let's do some background of the game's development. So let's get into some background on the game, and we're going to go pretty non-spoiler here because we don't want to ruin the experience for anyone who has not played the game yet. After we finish some background and our general impressions, we're going to move into a full spoiler recap.
Yes, let's.
So, this is going to be a lot of repeated stuff from the first or second episode of The Last of Us show, which again, once we move into the spoiler section, we're going to be doing full spoilers on both the game of the, and the show, but for now, you're safe. So this is some background on the video game development, and if you missed our show coverage, then this is all new to you. So the game began development in 2009. It was released in 2013 as a PlayStation 3 exclusive. Remember those days, the PlayStation 3 self-processor graphics.
Important distinction.
Yes, very different. The developer was Naughty Dog, who was known for the Jack and Daxter franchise before this, and also Uncharted, but we'll just gloss over that.
And Crash Bandicoot, by the way.
They did Crash Bandicoot?
Yes.
No, they didn't.
They did. We can Google it.
I don't believe you. I'm not Googling it. Neil Druckmann served as creative director for the game, and also directed one of the episodes of The Last of Us show. He was the showrunner of the show with Craig Mazin. The concept of the cordyceps, which is the sort of inciting event in this universe, this fungus plague that is turning people into what are sort of zombies, but not because they're maybe not really undead. It's a complicated thing, but it's a real fungus in the world. It's the premise is you have this cordyceps fungus that actually infects ants in the real world and takes over their brains by sort of infecting their heads. It's really disturbing, and it uses the ant's actual body to help spread the fungus. It's horrific.
Very horrific. As a person who is like clinically afraid of zombies, I knew about this from way back when because someone said, hey, you want to see something that's going to chill you to your bones? And I said, sure. And I did.
So yeah, there you have it. The zombies are real. They're just not.
They're just very small.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's terrifying. And so the showrunners in there, or sorry, I should say the game developers in their depravity, decided to have the virus, have the fungus go to humans and ruin the world. And that's basically the premise of the game. So the game makers, the developers, saw a documentary on BBC narrated by David Attenborough, because what else do you need but David Attenborough's voice? And they saw the ants being taken over by the cordyceps, and they were like, wow, that's an insane concept that could be applied to humans. I wouldn't have thought of that.
I'm not going to say I didn't think about it whenever I saw, like, oh, zombies could happen in this way. You know, my first thought wasn't a beautiful story like this, but it was definitely like, God, let's hope not.
Yeah. Designing the environment of the game, they were inspired by the book The World Without Us by Alan Weisman, which is this book that's about how much work needs to be done every day to keep nature from taking over cities. And basically the overgrowth in the game, because that's something that the game is very known for, is sort of destructed cities, but with overgrowth and sort of natural beauty. This was supposed to be beautiful amidst the horror and to show the theme of life goes on.
Yeah, which it always strikes me, not to get into the game coverage, but like in the game and the show, like it's that climate change thing where like, climate change isn't going to kill the planet. It's just going to kill us humans. The planet will keep going on, and it's going to be gorgeous.
What a lovely thought. So I'm going to save the rest of the background of the game development for the spoiler section because I don't want to ruin the game for anybody. But before we go into spoilers, before we get into this deep plot, it's a really rich story game. What did you think of the game? This was your first time playing it, right, Brandon?
Yes. Caught me in, 2023 without ever playing The Last of Us. One of the like gold standard of, story video games. The sort of progenitor of the movie video game. I hadn't played it because I'm too scared of zombies. so I finally went ahead and did it, mostly because of the TV show, and then also because I had some lovely friends invite me to do this thing being the podcast. So thoughts up top, I suppose, are thought it was great. The story of the game is really, it really does hold up. It's an old game, and parts of it feel that way. But I really enjoyed my experience. I'm sort of like, when I first completed it, I was like, whoa, now I can take a break, take a breather. And now like a couple of, like maybe a week or so on, I'm like, man, I really want to crack into The Last of Us Part 2. Just because I want the rest of the story. That being said, I thought the game mechanically felt kind of clunky.
Okay.
That's probably just attributed to its age. The controls didn't feel super great, but I liked the flexibility that I was given because I played it on normal, so I wasn't like too, like, starved for resources or anything like that. If I messed up, I could usually correct it and still not immediately die. But yeah, the characters, the dialogue, the performances, I really loved all of that. And I also loved how much I hated the enemies after I got used to them a little bit. Cause I definitely got locked up at certain spots or I'm like, I'm not going in that room. That's a stupid idea, but yeah.
Yeah. And it's a game that rewards exploring, right?
It really does. And you
want to go in the room as far as gameplay, but you don't want to go in the room because they're scary.
Exactly. Yeah. And also like, just on a pure mechanical thing, most of the games that I play using an Xbox controller. So like I was using the DualSense because I'm playing The Last of Us Part 1, which is the PS5 remake. Aiming and shooting is something I'm fairly competent at on an Xbox controller with the offset stick and like a specific way I hold my hands. I do it all the time. So when I have to translate that to a DualSense controller, which if you don't know, the sticks are symmetrical. They're both like lower on the controller itself. And I don't play a lot of third person shooters. So I'm like, I was very bad at shooting and it doesn't help that like, it's a game that's more based in realism. So there's a lot of bobbing that takes into effect. Like yes. A lot of enemies, they're not just walking normal. They're doing weird stuff, just ambulating weirdly. So like it was kind of hard to shoot. Eventually I got okay. But yeah, I enjoyed my experience a lot, and we can get into that more as we go, I think.
This was my probably fourth time playing this.
Well,
maybe third, I'm not sure.
Yes, and you also did play, you rented, I believe you said, the...
I did.
The fancy PS5 version, yes.
Yeah, so, that's one of the funny things that you said is the controls felt dated and clunky. This was a remake, so they actually used the engine of Part 2.
Right.
So they used the 2020 controls.
Okay.
So that's kind of funny that you were just like, nah, they feel dated because that just means that they're bad controls.
well, like, a lot of it took, like, for one thing, it is insane to me that you can't, to reload, you pull the same trigger that you would to shoot. Like that, I never got used to it. I kept pressing square to try and reload, even though that did not do the thing I wanted it to do. But like, just small things like that were like, it feels like a lot of games now, you can pick up the controller and you can kind of guess what action is going to be mapped to what thing. Not at all. not the case for this one. And, I didn't want to mess with it too much because my philosophy a lot of the time lately for gaming has been to try and stick as close to the dev intended control schemes as you can, unless you have like an accessibility reason. Obviously that's a different story, but they put them there for a reason. Not to get too off track, but God of War, 2018 God of War, I tried to play with the old school configuration until I realized like throwing your axe is such like a good feeling on the triggers themselves instead of like trying to mash buttons with like square and triangle essentially.
Yeah.
So I was like, you know what? I need to trust the people who made this game. And I did, and it was a way better experience. That being said, still didn't feel great. Maybe I should have adjusted some things, but another thing is I didn't want to, you know, change too much. And then The Last of Us Part Two, if it didn't have the immense accessibility options that this game has and doesn't let me pick and choose, I don't want the whole experience of The Last of Us Two to feel bad, because now I have vague muscle memories built in from The Last of Us Part One.
Right, that makes sense. The Last of Us Part 2 is actually what pioneered a lot of accessibility options. It was one of the most accessible games at the time that it came out, and then they mimicked a lot of that, and I think they expanded it just a little bit for The Last of Us Part 1, so you shouldn't have an issue changing things in The Last of Us Part 2 either. Something that's really impressive, and this is something that I think accessibility is an important thing to talk about in games, so I'm glad you brought it up, is that they are very, very granular in the ways that you can adjust the accessibility options and adjust the difficulties. You don't just have to say easy, medium, hard. You can adjust like the different kinds of combat, the different types of stealth, the different aspects of the game that might be more difficult or less difficult for you depending on what accessibility options you need.
Yeah, you can turn it
into
an
action game. And that is really impressive.
You can turn it into an action game if you want. Like, just turn up the loot, basically, like the stuff you can scavenge, like ammo and stuff. You can crank that up. Just so you can like play it more like an action game and not like a stealth game. If like stealth is like super bad for you.
Right.
It's so, like you said, so granular about like tailoring the game that you want to play.
Right. Right. And I think that's great. And I think more developers should take note of that. And I think that they are already. I mean, you boot up a Ubisoft game even now, and Ubisoft has been known for all kinds of nonsense. But now you boot up one of their games and they go, how do you want to play this? They're very, very good about giving people accessibility options and putting them right in your face, right? Like, you open the game and they're like, how do you want to play this?
Yeah.
Instead of making you go into six different menus to figure out what you can do.
I think it shows a lot of confidence in their game too. Like, hey, you can turn up all these kinds of weird and crazy knobs and we still stand by the product. It's going to be pretty much as intended. So like, there you go.
Right. Well, very cool. Yeah. So I played this back on track because we've discussed accessibility now for 5 minutes, but that's okay. I played this probably 3 or 4 times, and I played it for the first time in 2014. I had the first purchase my wife and I made together when we were dating was the first major purchase, I should say, is a PS4, because we both wanted one and we were both not that rich. We both were young and in our early 20s, and we could barely afford this. So we pooled our resources and we bought it and we shared it. And that was our first child together, really, before we had real children.
Aww.
And anyway, it came with a copy of The Last of Us Remastered, because it originally came out for PS3, and then they remastered it for PS4, and finally they put out the Part 2 in 2020 and did the remake in 2022 of Part 1. But so it came with The Last of Us 1, and my wife had played it on the PS3 because she was more of a PS3 player. I was more of the Xbox 360.
Same.
And she said, hey, this is a really great game. You should really play it. We have it already. And I said, well, you know what? You're pretty and we just started dating, so I'll listen to you.
Anything you say, dear.
Exactly. So I turned it on and I just couldn't stop playing. I beat it in probably just a few days because I just couldn't put it down. And it's still one of my favorite story games of all time. It is just really up there. I think it may tie or be slightly above BioShock as my favorite story game of all time. But probably The Last of Us pulls a little bit far forward because it's just a little bit more of a complete story. But anyway, the gameplay, I think you're right, is a little bit dated in the fact that in 2013, game controls were a lot less universal. A lot of things were in flux, especially on the PlayStation. I don't know why, but people seem to be very much experimenting with controls on PlayStation in a way that they weren't on Xbox as much.
Yeah, Halo kind of ruled the roost for controls. So everyone was kind of like, you know, putting everything where Halo or Call of Duty did, I feel like.
Yeah, no, because Halo had a weird reload, too, for a really long time, and then eventually, with Halo Infinite, they finally went to the X or square, if you're on PlayStation, reload. But yeah, Halo had the R1, the right bumper reload for a really long time.
Halo kind of has another off-topic. They kind of have an iconic set of configurations that are named. For instance, I use the green thumb configuration, which ended up turning into basically the way that Call of Duty is played, with the melee on the right stick and the reload was on X for me already.
Okay. Okay. Very nice. But yeah, no, I mean, before Call of Duty became the king of the castle, I guess.
Yes.
This was a much more varied landscape in terms of controls. And so The Last of Us Part 1, and then they follow it in Part 2, has that, you know, you said it before, you reload with the same button that you shoot with, and that is kind of tricky, right?
Yeah, you have to be engaging your gun, like aiming down the sights, and then you shoot. But if you're not aiming down sights, you will reload your gun.
Right. That being said, I think there's an argument for it, because I do think that if you're in this kind of survival situation, and you're being chased by a zombie, it's probably not that realistic that you're just like, brrr, brrr. You're actually going to be struggling against your nerves and struggling against the speed of this thing and the darkness and things like that. So, yeah, I think there's an argument.
I put a note in there later that I can go ahead and say now, because I think it fits. I felt like me struggling against the controls added to the suspense of especially the first couple of fights until I got there. So I was like, I was legit like, is this bad? Because it wants me to feel like this. Like, I thought it was almost like a tone control that they were doing. Is let's make these controls weird. Like how the tank controls controlled back in the day for Resident Evil. It added to the like chilling, like, you know, claustrophobia of being in this little room and like this slow creature bearing down upon you. But this time it's a fast moving, arm waving, you know, we'll get into it later.
Yeah. Well, those are pretty much all my initial thoughts. I mean, again, I love the game. I think the story is incredible. The controls are pretty good. I do think that they're pretty good. I really enjoy the looting system. I enjoy the way that they make you feel starved for resources at points, because I think that that adds to the survival element. And I mean, it's just stood the test of time, right? This was an extremely influential game. And I think it's time we talk about it in its entirety.
Yes, let's do it.
This is your spoiler warning. We're going to talk full spoilers for The Last of Us Part 1. We're not going to talk spoilers for The Last of Us Part 2, so don't worry about that.
I haven't even played it yet.
Part 1, we are definitely... Yeah, yeah. So I'm not going to spoil it for you.
Thank you.
So we're going to talk spoilers for The Last of Us Part 1 and the show on HBO for Season 1. However, we have not seen the last two episodes of Season 1 because we are recording this on March 2nd. So if we get something wrong about what's going to happen in the show, you know why. Brandon, why don't you take us into the beginning of the game?
Okay, so in 2013, Joel, who is voiced and motion captured by Troy Baker, is a single father living near Austin, Texas, with his 12-year-old daughter, Sarah, played by Hannah Hayes. One night, an outbreak of a mutant cordyceps fungus ravages the United States, transforming its human hosts into cannibalistic monsters. As Joel, his brother Tommy, played by Jeffrey Pierce, and Sarah flee the chaos, Sarah is shot by a soldier and dies in Joel's arms.
This game tells you what it is right away, right?
Yeah, it definitely does. We'll make comparisons to the TV show as we see them. Couple quick things. I love Sarah's accent. The show does a good job of characterizing Sarah. We have a lot less time with her in the game, but in the little bit of time we had with her, she was just so cute. I love her little Texas accent. And the watch.
Joel's a lot more Southern in the game too, isn't he?
Yeah, a lot more Southern. Like TV Joel slips into like Southern a couple of times where like it's a little bit like, what are you doing, Pedro? But like, you know, I have no faults with him. I think he's amazing. But like, yeah, he sometimes gets a little more Southern, but Game Joel, definitely a Texan.
Yeah, for sure.
I thought the watch scene was pretty cute. Very similar to the show as well. And then once Sarah wakes up and, you know, hell breaks loose, the tension is just right away, the way it has you creeping through the house as Sarah. And then, because she's just looking for Joel, because obviously he left to bust him out of jail. But the way that she walks down and through the like backyard, like she sees through the glass door the tire swing jump, like something run past it, I'm like, oh shit, already? And then, you know, Joel is the one who pops through the back door, and you know, everything gets started there, where, you know, he has to shoot Jimmy, who's the neighbor, and then they start...
Poor Jimmy.
Yeah, I know, poor Jimmy, right off the gate. But yeah, then they start to rush out of town, and then they get T-boned, and then the Sarah stuff happens. Very rough.
Very rough. I just want to make clear before we go forward, too, this is the IMDb summary, so if you do want to follow along with the text here, head on to IMDb. We'll throw this in the show notes as well. Because they're just very good at summarizing things, you know?
Yeah.
And if we're going to do an older game that already has a very good summary, I think you put it this way, Brandon, why break it, right? Why change it now?
It is already like good, succinct. They got this down. No need to try and rack my brain anymore. There's not that much RAM to go off of.
Right. And the cool thing about this summary, too, is that it includes the actor names, the voice actor names, who also, I'll add here, that they used motion capture for all these scenes. So these people were actually acting out the scenes, and they were being directed, and there were cameras in the room, and they were wearing those stupid suits. But they were really, like, living these scenes, and they were shooting them until they got them right. And I think that that really shows in the emotional impact of these scenes.
It feels more natural.
Yeah.
And I think they really crushed it with that. These feel like real people.
Yeah, and I don't think that this was a common thing in 2013, right? This was happening sometimes, but it was really like very big budget games, and it was not that often that they were doing this level of motion capture.
And certainly not in like the standard, like cutscenes, yes, but like not in-game rendered stuff like this. I don't think it was happening nearly as often with actors like that.
What did you think about playing as Sarah? Because this was something that I think is the reason that they had so much time with Sarah in the show, is that they wanted you to be able to empathize with her more. Whereas I think that they figured in the game, while you're playing as her, you're going to... That's one of the advantages of a video game, right? Is that it puts you in the shoes of the character.
You immediately empathize because you're like, oh, I am this person.
Right.
It's part
of a scared little girl looking for her dad.
Exactly. And you know, like, even if we didn't get much, like, we care about Master Chief, and that is like nothing. Like, he's like a nothing burger, especially if you've never read the books or, you know, engage with anything like that. But we still love Master Chief. We're this little girl for like, you know, 10 minutes, and we immediately become attached because we are moving with her. We are afraid for her because we are controlling her. Yeah, I thought it was interesting. I wasn't sure. Like, I feel like if I didn't watch most of the TV show first, I would have felt differently. Because what I knew about this game going in is that you are playing as this grizzled dude, and you're trying to get a little girl across the country. That's kind of all I knew about. So that girl could have been, if I didn't know, it could have been Sarah.
Right.
Which I imagine is what a lot of people thought initially going in.
That's exactly what I thought.
Yeah, so I was spoiled going in, but knowing what was coming, it was rough. I will say the TV show hit me in the feels more, but man, did this, it really got me. And I think the actors did an amazing job of selling this. Because, I mean, you know, yeah, it looks great, and it's acted great, but it is a video game. Like, there is no substitute yet for an actor doing their damn thing and seeing the flesh, you know? So,
yeah,
I thought it was really well done. And then from there, it does get into the game intro, which is very similar to the show. Did you have anything else on this, the opening area of the game?
Yeah, I mean, I know that there was a detail in these game development details, which I should have mentioned up front, too, is from the documentary Grounded, The Making of The Last of Us, which I'll link in the show notes as well, where they actually did a full-length documentary on the making of this game. And they were showing how they had to shoot that Sarah scene, and they just had to keep doing it. And they shot this so many times, and they stopped shooting. And then a few weeks later, Neil Druckmann called up Troy Baker, who played Joel, and he said, "Troy, we don't think we got the Sarah take.
Oh,
and
no.
We need you to come back in and do the Sarah death scene again." And he was like, "I have to work myself up like that again."
God, I can't, like, it can't be too hard of a job to be an actor a lot of the time. But man, that's sort of riding that sort of emotional roller coaster as by choice just sounds like a nightmare.
When they actually show them shooting the scene, at least one of the takes in the documentary, and you can see the actor who played Sarah, Hannah Hayes, she is like, her eyes are red and crying, and she's just like, she's really like selling it.
Yeah.
And Troy Baker even said, you know, she gave me the emotion that I needed. And so that must have been really difficult for them to shoot. And I'm sorry to Troy Baker that he had to do it
again. Yeah. But I mean, they got it. They nailed it.
They did. I mean, what an amazing intro. Like you said, if you don't know going in, it is shocking that Sarah dies.
Right.
Absolutely shocking. I don't think the games were doing these kinds of twists back then. This was pre-Game of Thrones popularity. This was not like the main character can die all of a sudden. You've played as this character. You haven't even played as Joel yet. You've played as Sarah. I mean, I guess you played with Joel a little bit carrying Sarah, but mostly you played as Sarah. You think that maybe she's the main character. No, she's not. It turns out she's going to die like 10 minutes into the game.
Very brutal. Yes. So then we get into the intro of the game. It's a really cool intro as far as video game intros go. They do like sort of a credits up top, kind of like a modern movie style credits. And they are doing like these broadcast messages that you get in like, I guess like a lot of zombie movie credits where they're playing like, you know, this happened in this city and oh, there's da 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 da.
And I think the city of Townsville.
Exactly. I think it was really well done, and I thought it was cool. And one thing I did want to note as a gameplay note, as I was playing as Sarah, the DualSense controller was glowing purple. And then I noticed after this, whenever I started playing as Joel, the DualSense LED turned green. And a little bit later, we get a blue character. Pretty interesting. And every time that you'd switch, it would be the corresponding color to the character. I don't know if it did that on the DualShock, whatever it was for the earlier PlayStations.
I don't even think the PlayStation 3 did that. I think PlayStation 4 did changing colors, but not the PlayStation 3 DualSense 3. DualShock 3, sorry.
That's my favorite PlayStation controller, by the way, is the DualShock 3.
Is it?
Except that it has a mini USB port on top. Give me one of those bad boys with a USB-C, and I am golden for PlayStation games. But anyway. Moving on.
All right. If you say so.
It's a classic shape. I love it. Anyway, back to the synopsis. Thank you, IMDb. 20 years later, most of civilization has been destroyed by the infection. Survivors live in heavily policed quarantine zones, independent settlements, and nomadic groups. Joel works as a smuggler with his friend Tess, who's played by Annie Vershing. Is that how you say it? Vershing?
I don't know. Could be anything.
Annie Vershing in RIP, by the way. She just passed away.
Oh, yeah, she did just pass.
Yeah. She did an amazing job. I'll say that now. In a Boston quarantine zone. They hunt down Robert, who's played by Robin Atkins Downs. I didn't know that. In an arms dealer to recover a stolen weapons cache. Before Tess kills him, Robert reveals that he traded the goods with the Fireflies, a rebel group opposing the quarantine zone authorities. The leader of the Fireflies, Marlene, played by Merle Dandridge, promises to double their stolen cash in return for smuggling a teenage girl, Ellie, played by Ashley Johnson, to Fireflies hiding outside of the quarantine.
So let's call out a few actors here first.
Yes.
Merle Dandridge plays Marlene in the show, too.
Yes. Yes, that was interesting because obviously I was show first until the Left Behind episode. It was interesting to see the in-game version of her portrayed by the same person.
Yeah, and she actually had to audition for the show. She heard the show was happening and she auditioned for it on her own free will. She was not basically just like shoved in there from the game. She had to go seek out this role. So that was pretty cool.
I didn't know she auditioned. That's crazy.
Yeah, she had to go through the whole regular process, apparently.
Wow.
So, Ellie, played by Ashley Johnson. Ashley Johnson, by the time this comes out, will have appeared in the show as Ellie's mom. She's going to play Ellie's mom in the finale, I think.
What?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. That's awesome.
Yeah, so they're bringing her back to play her own mother. One other thing is Troy Baker, who plays Joel, is going to be in episode 8. Which is the episode that's coming out right after we record this. And he's going to play one of David's henchmen. We have a lot of people from the game showing up in the show. I think that's pretty cool. And yeah, it's nice to see familiar faces.
It is. And I think it's cool that the show kind of wants them involved. Craig Mazin is such a big fan of the game that I feel like it was almost like he was like, please, let's get as many of these people in there because, you appreciate the good job that they did and you kind of want them involved. And Troy Baker is very involved with hosting the podcast about the show, the like after show podcast for HBO.
Right.
So I like that they're keeping it in the family, as it were.
Definitely. Yeah, you can tell that when they're making the show, Craig Mazin is a super fan, and Neil Druckmann obviously made the game, so he's a big fan of it.
Yeah.
But yeah, they're doing it out of love. You can tell every episode is really handcrafted with love.
For sure. So at this point in the game, I noticed that there is basically a grime filter over everything. Like everything is fucking gross, and the TV show does a good job of this as well. Like really noted when watching the show, I saw a lot of like just tattery clothes that look like they've been through hell. Same thing in the game. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
right up top too. Like as soon as you're 20 years in the future, like all the clothing is like threadbare and stuff. Like I said, that grime filter, you know, you see the ration line with the execution in the street. It does a really good job of world building right up top, with, you know, the way the world is after the 20 years. First sort of gameplay note, as I was getting into the game proper, I used one of those accessibility options I mentioned to turn off the tippity taps for the QuickTime events. So,
okay,
I'm old now and I don't want to tap triangle real fast for any reason if I don't have to. So through my playthrough, anytime I had to quickly mash triangle, I just held the button down and it was a huge improvement,
that's fair.
I'm sure.
That's fair. It is very annoying to do those. I think that they've kind of actually decreased in gaming. I haven't noticed them as much lately.
That was like a hallmark of the Xbox 360, PS3 era, is a lot of QuickTime events.
Yes, that is true. Like the God of War series, especially.
Exactly. And even 2018 God of War, they sort of pay homage to that a couple of times.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
they know. And that's the first game I ever turned off, you know, tippy taps. I turned that off and I, you know, never looking back, never doing it again.
You had a great time after that, I see.
I absolutely did.
Well, excellent. So something that's different from the game here, I think that we should talk about Ellie to begin with before we even get into the difference that I was about to bring up. So Ellie in the game is a character that was created, you know, obviously by the developers, but was really developed by Ashley Johnson as well. Because in the beginning, sort of, Ellie was this passive character. She was going to be alongside Joel. She was going to be his companion, his cargo, right?
Yes.
And then there was a scene where she was going to just stand by while Joel got beaten the shit out of in a car or something by some guy. And Ashley Johnson went up to Neil Druckmann and said, I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't just stand there while he's getting beaten up. This is a world that, like, you have to defend yourself, and I would go defend Joel. And Neil Druckmann goes, huh, you're right. And then they just decided to make Ellie way more violent.
Yeah, I like how open they seem to be with, like, you know, creators that are open to suggestion and aren't, like, completely in their own head about stuff. Like, I feel like that's really beneficial to stories in general. It's one of the reasons why representation matters in art, is because, like, with these influences, like Ashley Johnson, you know, it just wasn't in Druckmann's head, like, that a little girl would want to fight back. But
right,
with Ashley Johnson's experience as being one at some point, like, she was able to be like, yeah, even I wouldn't just let this person that I care about die in the street like this. So, like,
yeah,
I think it's smart for creators to listen and to adapt. And they obviously did that with The Last of Us. And it's probably one of the reasons why it's such a standout story.
I agree totally. You know, what's also funny about Ashley Johnson is she, you know, a lot of the other voice actors, like Troy Baker especially, you hear them use their normal speaking voice, and they have a totally different voice. They're putting on a voice. They're
hugely a different. The character. Yeah.
You hear Ashley Johnson talking, you're like, oh, that's Ellie. That's just her voice.
Right. And I think that's a neat thing about actors. Like both approaches are equally as satisfying, I think, with Troy Baker doing the character, like you said, and then Ashley Johnson just basically being Ellie. Like, there's something about both of those, like, I guess, styles that is so, like, interesting, for lack of a better word, because it's you can paint with a different kind of paintbrush for the different styles. And, but yeah, I think it's a cool way to approach it. You're seeing with both of these main characters, two different approaches.
Right. And Ellie was the first one cast out of the main characters.
Yeah,
and then
that's
they cast Joel from Ellie, basically.
Yeah.
Because they wanted to make sure the chemistry between those two were perfect, because obviously that's the meat of the story. That's the meat of the character moments.
I imagine it's harder to get an Ellie than it would be to get, like, you know, your kind of standard heroic character. in Joel.
Definitely. Definitely. And, you know, part of it is they really wanted this to be a character-driven game. They didn't want it to be just an action game. They already did that with Uncharted, right? They didn't need another Uncharted. But what they wanted was something that you could really focus on these small moments. And they even considered not having a monster to fight, to having more of a survival game where you were just surviving in this sort of outbreak that was just killing people, but not maybe turning them into zombies. And they were like, well, yeah, but we make action games, so we have to add some monsters. And that's how they ended up there. But, and I think that that's right. I think that it works better that way. But it's just interesting that like their priority was that drama.
It's one of the reasons why you have a small group of people and not just a, like a character, like a Master Chief, for instance.
Right.
You want there to be character interaction and that kind of thing. And I think they really crushed it.
And it's why Master Chief has Cortana,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. Without Cortana, Master Chief is nothing. I stand by it.
Don't tell that to anybody. Don't tell that to 343.
I would. Right to their faces.
We're not going to talk about Halo today because I'm going to rant and it's not going to happen. Anyway, one of my favorite franchises ever that's been run into the ground. Anyway.
I can't believe what they've done. So game versus show again. I got a couple notes here. I found myself being afraid right out of the gate to step on shroomy shit that was coming out of walls and stuff. Because obviously in the show, they don't have the spores.
Right.
So in the show, there's this wood wide web of like yucky mushrooms that if you step on it, you know, can summon a horde because they're all connected. But in the show, the outbreak was initially triggered by these spores. In the game, it functions. You walk into a room and you're like, oh no, it's the air is yucky in here. Better put on my mask. And they mask up with the gas masks.
So I get why they did this. I get why they didn't want the gas masks.
Yeah.
But I don't get why they did the wood wide web because, and you know what? Listeners, again, it's March 2nd. We haven't seen the last two episodes. They might do something cool with it. But as of right now, I don't think that the wood wide web change has paid off. I don't feel like it added something, really. If anything, I would have rather them just not have a secondary way of spreading beyond biting.
Yeah, I could see that. The one moment that it played in the show, it was very pulse pounding. I think it was very effective. But yeah, ever since then, especially since they've gone to a much more secluded, like, you know, a lot more solitude out there out west than you are in like the city areas where you'd probably find a lot more fully flowered, bloomed, cached, essentially, zombies, I'll call them monsters.
Yeah. And you have to imagine if you're in this wilderness that freezes over every year, it's not going to have the chance to get quite as big as in a city where there might be like more places to hide, basically.
Yeah, the fungus is still a living thing. So like it is just as susceptible as environmental damage, through freezing as like a human would be. So it's...
Although that is Boston, so that's basically inhospitable now.
That's
so
true.
I don't know.
I found Tess to be pretty bloodthirsty. And Joel,
yes,
definitely her henchman, especially in the game. Like, Joel kind of is just straight up buff henchman. Yes, ma'am, to Tess. A lot less, it feels like a lot less of a relationship in the game than it did in the show. Like a romantic relationship. It felt more like,
okay,
to me that Joel was just kind of her, like, her muscle.
No, I got it that it was a relationship in the game, I think. They made it less explicit
by
the end. But I do think the subtext was still there. I agree with you, though. Joel is very passive. I think that he... I don't know. Maybe it's because in the show, they knew that they wanted him, you know, Pedro Pascal to be like the shining glory of the show. And they wanted him to not be secondary to Tess. But I do think that he listened to her a bit, like he listened to her on what to do with Robert and things like that. He certainly respected her in the show.
Yeah.
But I agree with you. He was definitely second fiddle in the game.
Yeah. And as we were going about that first mission, I did find it like kind of wild. Like, wow, I sure am killing a whole lot of dudes right now, which is obviously like not how that went in the show, but also like there's just not much killing in the show, period.
Right. Well, that's part of it too, is, and I think they said this on one of the official podcasts, we don't want you mass murdering all of these people, because you're not going to be able to empathize with Pedro Pascal's character anymore.
Exactly, this bloodthirsty monster.
In a game, you're used to random, just like boom, 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 boom. In a show, you're like, oh my God, he's just killing everyone in sight.
Everyone. Fucking every. And I did too. I'm bad at stealth, so I killed a lot of things. So then you bump into Marlene, and that takes you to Ellie. And Ellie's like funny right out of the gate, which I thought was great.
Yes.
Yeah, but we can actually get into the next little section here if you're all done with this part.
Well, before we do that, let's take a quick break, and then we'll get back and we will discuss the rest of Spring.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
And we're back. Brandon, let's finish the rest of Spring here.
All right. Joel, Tess, and Ellie sneak out in the night, but after an encounter with a patrol, they discover Ellie is infected. Full infection normally occurs in under 2 days, but Ellie claims she was infected 3 weeks ago and that her immunity may lead to a cure. The trio make their way to their destination through hordes of infected, but find that the fireflies there have been killed. Tess reveals that she has been bitten by an infected. Believing in Ellie's importance, Tess sacrifices herself against pursuing military soldiers so Joel and Ellie can escape.
Yeah, so the Tess bite, again, it's pretty tropey nowadays, but it did. I had not been a big zombie movie connoisseur at the time I played this, because as you have identified yourself now, I at the time was kind of a horror movie wuss.
Right.
And my wife has changed that, because she was like, I'm not going to just not watch horror movies. So I had to eventually suck it up.
And you had to adapt.
And I've learned to have fun with them. You know, I've learned to basically laugh at them, which is how you have to enjoy horror movies. And we have fun with them now. But so I wasn't expecting the test bite, because I thought that, you know, all right, so we got our trio and we're going to go. And every time I felt safe, they would rip that person away from me. Sarah and then Tess. And then we keep just going down the list.
Yeah, it's interesting because while Tess is there, it's interesting the way that they kind of treat that as a tutorial, because Tess is making all the decisions that you're going to have to make later. So it's teaching you that through Tess in the gameplay. Tess is like, here, you need to go do this, or shh, be quiet, we're going to try and sneak around these people. These are all decisions that you're going to have to make later as Joel, but Tess is sort of showing you the ropes of how you navigate this actual game, which I think is cool. It's a cool way of storytelling through a game and through gameplay mechanics. Thought that was really neat. Also, this is where we get our first bit of clickers. And boy, do I hate them. And they really scare me in a way that I enjoy.
Yeah, they're spooky. They are really spooky.
Yeah, you start the game with just like a 9mm pistol. And then you get the revolver and you're fighting all these runners and one clicker. And I was just so bad at the stealthing right up top. Is like really pulse pounding. And this is kind of where I noted that I was disliking the controls, because it could be adding to the suspense. Because like I'd go to like reload my gun and it would swing my stupid like stick that I picked up because yeah. I mash reload with square and I'm not supposed to be doing that. And then I just get eaten. So it's rough.
Yeah.
The sneaking, and generally in most games, I'm not a big stealth game guy. So the stealth always stresses me out. It's something that you like, especially playing on like not a easy mode or something, because I was playing on normal. I wanted sort of I try and go for the as intended playthrough, which I would assume is normal. And, you know, it really kind of wants you to stealth it. So I tried as much as I could, usually ended up failing and then working my way out of it. So it goes on for a little bit, and then there's one part that struck me as like where I automatically like fell in love. Like Ellie was just great. Was a garage door closes after a fight, and it closes over a zombie. And whenever it's all clear, Ellie's like, you got something on your shoe. And Joel looks down and it's a hand just grabbing his ankle. Just such a funny way to like, you know, add some levity and sort of diffuse that situation.
She's so goddamn sarcastic.
She really is.
Game. I mean, it's really an excellent performance by Ashley Johnson, because she says it in such a like eat shit bro way. And I can't imagine anyone else in this role. And then yet, Bella Ramsey is doing a great job both channeling the character but putting her own spin on it.
Yeah, I think she's crushing it. I guess we can get into a little bit of this now with Ellie, show versus game. I find myself more protective of game Ellie than show Ellie. Show Ellie reads to me as older, almost.
Well, she is older, right? I mean, Bella Ramsey's 19.
Yeah, so the actress...
Ellie is a game character that is generated to look 15.
Exactly. She feels... And she, like, even Ashley's portrayal, even her portrayal, like, I feel like she does a better job of, like, the innocence, I suppose.
Yeah.
In that...
The voice cracks a little more, right? Like, it just sort of cuts off at certain points, and it's... Yeah, she feels more like a teenager, I guess.
Bella is so good at projecting strength, even whenever you know it is just a suit of armor that she's wearing. It's a different... I think it's a slightly different way to portray Ellie, and I think it works really well. Whereas Ashley's portraying Ellie more as, like, exactly what's on the tin whenever you're looking at her. Whereas Bella's like, I'm a badass, you know, like she's just wearing that mask instead.
Yeah.
And I think it's interesting. That's like the biggest difference between the two for me after finally now having, you know, played the game and watched most of the show.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree with you. I mean, I think that game Ellie is still very tough, but
for sure
underneath she is very broken. And just like Joel is, right? Like they're supposed to mirror each other.
They're supposed to both
have issues of abandonment and commitment that they are working through together while also being dicks to each other.
Yeah, it's one of the things that initially repelled them and then eventually drew them together, is how similar they are.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I loved it. Loving it so far. I think I scrolled up a little bit too much here. I did. Okay. We get to the first workbench in this section too, which... we can talk about the crafting in the game. I think initially it seemed okay, but as you progress through the game, man, the crafting really does substantially change the way that the guns function. And I find myself like really loving just the crafting ASMR of Joel pulling the tools and like as he you know, upgrades with more tools and stuff, like the little things he does to the guns themselves. I think it's like really satisfying to upgrade weapons in this game.
It is. And again, this is very improved from the original. This is basically the way it looks in part two. So they've just taken it from there. But I'm really glad they did, because it looks so much better. It looks real, right?
Like, it does.
It looks real that he's just...
Like the way he disassembles like the Magnum, and not Magnum, but the revolver, like pulling off the cylinder and stuff. Like it just all looks, and like the sounds, it's just gun ASMR and it's pretty nice.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah, and I do like the crafting system generally. I think it's satisfying to watch, like you said, but it's also sort of satisfying to finally upgrade a gun to the full potential, and then you have less shake, and it's nicer to look at. It's a satisfying system, and it's also pretty interesting how it encourages you to loot. You don't really have to, but if you really want to have an easier time, you got to loot parts and you got to loot so that you can upgrade with pills, because that's how you upgrade in the game. You just need to take some pills. You need to collect these.
They're like supplements. Like it wants you to take vitamins and that's how you get special.
Yeah. And then you have to collect these like manuals, right? These manuals of how to do things. And that'll show you these new skill trees that will allow you to use your pills to do new things.
I think it's neat too that like some of those manuals kind of read as jokes. Like in Bill's bar later on, you pick up a manual and I believe it's for making sharpening your knives, but a part of that book is cut up and there's blood all over it. Like someone did not take the lessons to heart. I will say during my playthrough, I did not read everything. I did not, like, I picked up as much as I could find, but if it had like a whole bunch of shit to read about like stories, a lot of the time I just didn't read that. I just kept progressing.
You're missing out.
I know, I really am. And I figure maybe you'd might pepper in some of these as we go, but yeah, where I'd known about them, I tried to pay like really close attention, but this one I just kind of wanted to get through.
Fair enough.
In a, you know, at a decent time. Did not read them all, but I will be playing this game again. I'm sure of it.
Yeah, it's a good one.
The puzzles, I did like maybe the first and second one, and then by the third one, these puzzles really do feel bad to play in a.
Oh yeah.
In today's, I think, landscape. I think they're stupid. And
tell me more about the puzzles though. What are you calling puzzles here?
The puzzles as in the, you need to pick up the ladder and it goes over there, or you need to figure out that Ellie can float on a thing and then moving her to another thing. Or, you know,
there's a pallet in every single body of water. Did you know that?
Yeah, there's a wooden pallet that floats. Yeah, it's yeah, those I found played not great, which, by the way, there is an accessibility option to skip all of those. I probably will do that on my next run.
So what does it do?
I have no idea. I thought about that, like maybe just like,
okay, you didn't do this.
I wanted to play the game as close as I could to the, like, you know, original experience, or at least the default experience. The only thing is that I really changed are kind of what I said about the quick time event fast forwarding by holding the button instead of tip taps.
I will say in the second game there are definitely still puzzles, but they're not really the same. They're a lot more modern.
I will say, in to skip to Left Behind, the one or two puzzles in that game were better. Like, it felt like they might have learned as they were going. I don't know. It's hard to say because this is a remaster. I don't know what was initial, and, you know, but they did feel better and smarter as far as puzzles go. This is coming from me, a guy who plays Destiny, which, like, in raids and stuff, like, there's interesting puzzles that you need to figure out to progress your encounters and stuff. So this is me kind of just being a pain in the ass about gameplay.
Pain away. And speaking of pain, why don't we move on to Bill and Frank?
Yes. I will say that a couple of things here. Tess's death was pretty moving in the game, and the difference between the game and the show there was it was the infected that got, you know, them out of town and Tess killed, but Tess going down in a firefight was pretty cool, and the escape was really tense. Like, you had to like fight your way out of there more than they kind of did in the show, where they just kind of bounced. And I thought that was a pretty good human scale fight.
Yeah, that makes sense. It's they did have Fedra. That's who came in the game.
Yes,
and Fedra. I don't know how much it made sense for them to be there. I guess maybe they got word of a Firefly thing. But if they're outside of the city, I don't know. Is Fedra really going to risk going outside of the main city?
I can't imagine that they would. But it was, I think, a good video game fight. And it was obviously your first chance of, you have to make the decisions. You have to get Ellie out of here. This is the game
now. Yeah. That's true. That's very true. Yeah. So Fedra, again, we should make clear, they are really a very much more faceless villain in the game. They're very much more NPCs, whereas in the show, they're like, hey, let's humanize everybody.
Yeah, in the game, the only dealings that you've had with Fedra is they shoot a guy in the street as soon as you walk into Boston. They, you know, they're you know, shooting fully automatic weapons as you're creeping through these, like just out of their view. Yeah, they're Nazis, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't reminds feel me bad of what
Bill
as
says
you
in the show, right?
Exactly.
The government are Nazis now.
Well, not now. But yeah. Okay, so progressing with the story here, Joel decides to find Tommy, a former Firefly. I said that like that's who Tommy is to him. Joel decides to find Tommy, who is a former Firefly, in the hope that he can locate the remaining Fireflies. With the help of Bill, played by W. Earl Brown, a smuggler who owes Joel a favor, they acquire a working vehicle. A lot of Bill stuff happens. that I think is interesting here. I got a genuine huge scare from a runner outside of Billstown. This was the first time that I was really crutching hard on the listening mechanic you can do. So
okay,
in the game, I believe it is L1. You hold, now that's sprint. Maybe it's R1. Either way.
I think it's R1.
Doesn't matter. You hold that down and everything slows down and it's listening mode. And you can kind of see through walls and stuff. That's how they do it. The game goes grayscale and you see glowing where you can hear. So like you can see if a clicker is hiding in a shed, for instance, or if a runner.
So Joel is Spider-Man, basically.
Yes, it's his spider sense going. I was crutching on that super hard. And I walked around a corner like, I didn't hear anything. And then just boom, I got a runner just comes up and enters. I got to, hold down square to get him to not touch me anymore. And it scared the living shit out of me. This is one of the first times I was like, you can't always trust listening mode.
If they're not moving, they might not be making a sound.
Yeah. I will say the runners, one of the things is super unnerving about them is, they're like the first level of infected. So they're pretty much the like classic running zombies of this story. The way they are, they're just sort of like standing in place when there's nothing for them to be doing, and they just scream or like just very uncomfortable sounding, like, and it's really chilling. They're one of the easier enemies that you have to fight because the one thing, they're fast, but you can just take them down with melee if you want. As long as you don't get ganged up on by them, they're not very tough to take down. But the way they just kind of like yell and cry out in pain constantly, it's really unsettling. And it's, I think a neat way to use that to tell that story of like, man, it must be uncomfortable to be in one of these bodies.
Absolutely.
And it's a way to make them creepy too. They don't have giant mushrooms growing out of their faces, but they are just scary in that, like, holy shit, it's really unsettling hearing them make all these noises and stuff. This is also where we get to the set piece where you step into one of Bill's traps and you hang upside down as you're being swarmed by infected. And Ellie has to break you out of this weight trap that you've been caught in. And so you're upside down defending Ellie and yourself, obviously. From all these rushing infected, when
that was so good. I wish they would have done that in the show. And I said this to David, like, I think that would have been fun. I know it's more of a game thing, but yeah,
it's such a cool set piece. Like, all they had to do was turn it upside down, but it was just so fun and like interesting. That's one of the few that I think I got first try, and I felt such a like achievement. Like, hell yes, I crushed. And that's where eventually, Ellie gets you out of that, and then Bill comes and sort of saves you. Bill, handcuffs Joel, I think. No, he handcuffs Ellie because he doesn't know her, and Bill is being very Bill about the whole thing, very cautious. Ellie breaks out because Bill's got her, Joel held at gunpoint. But Ellie breaks out and hits him with a pipe, which, like, she just went right to it. Eventually they sort of team up. But also, one thing I had noted that Bill uses a kukri, which is, like, I'm not sure where that sort of machete knife thing is from, but I love one. I love a kukri.
Yeah. Bill is a great character in both the show and the game. He is much less humanized in the game. He's kind of just an asshole, right?
He is. I thought Oliver Platt would have made a good Bill just as we saw him in the game. And then, like, I was curious. I was like, who is this guy? And then I looked up the actor, and it was, the only thing I'd seen him in is an episode of Justified where he's a great character actor. And he had a great, like, criminal character on that show that was like doing a hostage situation. Is great Southern bad guy character actor, and I knew I recognized it. I just couldn't picture it, but I was like, Oliver Platt would have been a good in this role, I think.
Nice. Yeah, so the note from Frank, did you read that one at least?
I did.
That one was hard, huh?
It was rough, especially compared to the show. That was pretty wild. Because it's obviously dramatically different. It's a happy ending in the show. In the game, it is very not a happy ending.
No. Frank, he just hates Bill's guts.
Yeah, it really, and it happens at the end of, like, this crazy section too, where you're trying to, the whole thing with Bill is you're trying to get a battery from this truck that he knows of that's in the, like, near the school. So it's all this action. And like in the first moment of like that, you can take a breather from like a stealth section and like, you know, there's a bloater fight in the gym. So all of that happens. And then as soon as you're free for a second and everything is cool, you guys turn around and there's just a man hanging and it's fucking Frank.
Right.
With literally with a suicide note there.
Basically saying, I would rather be infected and shot in the head than spend another day with you.
Yeah.
Oh my God. How dark is that?
Very brutal. Also, like, the reason that he knew who it was is that only Frank would wear a shirt like that. And it was kind of like just a Hawaiian shirt. But yeah.
This was a big deal too, right? Because this was not an era where gay relationships were depicted in video games for sure.
Definitely not in games. 2013 it would have been. Yeah. It was fairly uncommon, which the way that Bill kind of just rolls with it and like immediately is like putting on the mask of like just being defensive is interesting. Like, he's like, yeah, serves him right, idiot. That's how you die if you don't, you know, play by Bill's rules. He didn't say that exact thing. I'm paraphrasing. But like the way he sort of pretended it didn't get to him, I think the actor did a very good job of making that very readable. But it's pretty brutal. Also, we can do a quick arsenal review. We got a shotgun. We got a bow by this point. We got the revolver. The shotgun came in very clutch for that bloater fight, which I thought was... I don't know how much I liked the bloater fights, I'll say.
Yeah. They are a little bit of sponges.
Yeah, just bullet sponge.
Sponges.
I think there's a bloater fight a little later in the game that plays better because you're in like a tight building and you got to be like running around and stuff. I'll get more into that, but it's got a very claustrophobic, like, and it's a good fight, I think. The worst part about the bloater fights is that you get caught up in fighting the rest of the things, and then a bloater catches you off guard, grabs you, and, you know, rips your head off. But
right,
yeah, that the first bloater fight in the gym was a pretty interesting way to. And they also, as you're looting beforehand, there's a little like swatch of stuff that like it shows the different classifications of them, and the bloater one is ripped off. I knew what a bloater was going into the game, because I've seen the show and there's a bloater in one of the episodes, but I saw like a part of its head and they had ripped off to where like they didn't want you to know about the bloater just yet. So I thought, I was like, ah, I see what you're doing there. So I kind of had the best of both worlds where I knew some spoilers, but like I still got to be surprised and excited and delighted in most cases.
When the bloater showed up in my first playthrough, when this was my first experience in the whole franchise, I went, what the fuck is that?
Yeah, I didn't have that reaction. I just, oh no. Like already? Man, it's so early. But yeah, luckily I had collected a lot of shotgun ammo by that point. And Bill does kind of a good job because he's sort of on top of the bleachers doing some suppressing fire for you. But yeah, that was a pretty fun section there. Eventually, you get the battery. Frank had the battery. He had stolen the battery. So you get that. And in this section, Joel tells Ellie that she was doing a good job, which is...
He's not quite as withholding in the game, is he?
No, like he seems a little bit more like human in certain ways. Like Pedro does a very good job of like showing a lot of this, like putting on the veneer of a badass that I think in the show, both Pedro and what's her name? Bella. They both do a good job of like sort of having that same characteristic where in the game, they seem a little bit more like willing to be genuine, I guess. This is where we find out Ellie can pop a clutch and that there's another badass set piece where you're pushing a truck as Ellie is trying to pop the clutch of it and get it going. And you have to stop pushing to kill monsters. And it's a really fun section.
I had a lot of fun with this part. It was very dark. You know what's funny is I hadn't played this in years before I replayed it in this part. And I only remember like bits and pieces of what happened. and I wanted to play it before the show. And I kept going to my wife, who remembered it more than me for some reason. I think she might have played it more recently than me. I kept going, is this the cannibal part? Was Bill the cannibal?
No.
And she would go, no, it's not Bill. Relax. And then the same thing in the next section, Sam and Henry. I was like, are they the cannibals? I don't remember.
There's never a good situation when you run into cannibals in the post-apocalypse. There's lots of very fun examples of that. But luckily, I think it's really understated in this version. Before we get too much past this, there's a couple things I've found. There's a huge section that you can stealth in where you're going to get the battery. It's sort of the only successful way I stealthed because there were so many of them there. And I also found that the Shiv rules. So every single time I could update it, I would upgrade the Shiv. So that was like one of the first.
The Shiv does rule.
Yeah, it's one of the very first upgrades I got all the way done.
I think you'll enjoy The Last of Us Part 2.
Good. That's very good. I'm in like such a weird zone of The Last of Us because like I feel like there are barely any people like me that exist right now that have only knowledge of the first one and have only played the first game. I feel like you've either not played any of them or you've played them both. So I'm like in this.
Well, actually, I didn't play the second one until like two episodes into the show.
Really?
I said, you know what? Well, I played the first like half of it, mm-hmm. and I didn't want to finish it
for
various reasons.
Gotcha.
Well, it was a great game, but it made me really sad.
I understand that.
And I didn't want to be sad at the time. And then I played the whole thing again, and I was like, that was a masterpiece, and I still feel sad.
Yeah. Some of the best masterpieces elicit a lot of strong emotions, so...
Yeah.
You gotta embrace it.
Part two is just as emotional as part one, if not more.
Right. So we get out there. Bill gives us a siphon. And for Bill, he was nice. Like, I feel like they had a pleasant, goodbye. They were kind of jerks to each other in the way that, you know, that you are. If you're gruff, bros living in the post-apocalypse. From there, we get the first Savage Starlight sighting. We get a cassette and we also get a porno mag, which was a very fun scene, pretty much exactly replicated in the show. It's very similar.
Yeah. The porno mag scene was really just something, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was it made me laugh out loud. Like again, I saw this the first time in the game and she was like, oh, why are the pages sticky? And just Joel's discomfort, even though it's a game and his face isn't emoting as much as Pedro Pascal's where it just drops.
Yeah.
It's just very funny. They do a great job with
especially
it.
Because like I said, with Ellie reading younger to me, because obviously she's built pixel by pixel to do that. But like, yeah, the way that she is just pulling his chain there is so funny to me. And they do the same I'm not even tired smash cut, which is very cute, to Pittsburgh, which is a different city than in the show. But, you know, it doesn't matter. You ready to move to the next section?
I am ready.
All right. Driving into Pittsburgh, they are ambushed by bandits and their car is wrecked. They ally with two brothers, Henry, played by Brandon Scott, and Sam, played by, Nadaj Jeter.
Najee Jeter.
I could have looked this up, but I didn't. That's my fault. I'm unprofessional. After they escape the city, Sam is bitten by an infected, but hides it from the group. As his infection takes hold, Sam attacks Ellie, but Henry shoots him and then commits suicide out of grief. A lot of stuff to get into this one. There's a very rough way to cut that down. I got a lot of notes here.
All right. Get going already.
All right. So into your podcast, I agree with you. He ain't even hurt is such a good sort of line there where I think, because obviously what's happening is the bandit walks out in the middle of the street pretending that he's hurt and Ellie's like, let's get him. But Joel, you know, puts it in drive and says, he ain't even hurt. And then, I think it's a very fun way that the diegetic music turns into the soundtrack of the show here. I didn't look up the song. I thought it played really well because you're listening to the cassette of this old country song. And as he hits the gas and sort of shit breaks bad, it turns from being on the radio to being the soundtrack and it worked super well. But yeah, that I think you kind of, in your coverage of the episode, Pedro does not say the line, he ain't even hurt. He just, what did he say? Do you remember?
I think she said, are you going to help him? And he just speeds up. I don't even think he says anything.
You can see it in his face. Like, I think he conveys that very well without the words, he ain't even hurt.
Yeah.
Because he just has a knowing, like, I've pulled this shit before. We got to get out of here.
Right.
I think he does a good job of saying that. But I think it is a pretty iconic line.
I know. And I do think it tells you everything you need to know about Joel, right? Like, I have done this shit before. I know exactly what this game is.
And I do think Pedro says that with his face. So I think that's, I don't know. I'm hit or miss whether, you know,
it's not enough. It's not enough. We needed the line. That's my stance and I will not change it.
Right. I did find it wild that there was no, like a splash screen to separate acts, like Pittsburgh on the bottom. They kind of do this later with the seasons. I thought it was like, cause it just moved right from the Bill shit to this. I thought that was weird that they didn't have anything to separate it, but I think it's a good choice because they do that later. And here it's like everything just feels like such a fluid story.
Right. I do like that they divide it by seasons. I don't know why, but it's just a nice way to have that cadence.
Yeah, you convey time passing in that way with that splash screen, and I think it's very effective. Speaking of effective, holy shit, I'll say the way this fight plays out is a little different, and in the game it is way more brutal. Joel slashes the throat of a bandit with this glass that's from this like a display case, and they brick the face of a man. Really brutal. Whereas, you know, the show, there's just some shooting stuff, and Joel does have to coup de grace with a knife a guy, but that's seen off screen. And then you get to as you're progressing up in this little base here, you find hunter victims where they had basically been grabbing people, like getting rid of all their, like stealing their gear, basically. And you find notes of that, of where it's just like they're just gathering from passersby.
Yeah. Right.
Which this is the section where in the show they teach you about these people. It's obviously a different group. It's a different city, but these are a lot more sort of nameless, faceless bandits.
Agreed. I think that the show does a better job for TV, but I think that it's fine to just have these NPC characters, these NPC faceless villains in the game.
I think so too. And I mean, like, having them be nameless and faceless is storytelling in its own. Like, you never know who you're going to bump into. And I think it's, you know, these are people. You can think of them as people because they are. They're just, you know, more savage. They're more, you know, they're willing to do whatever it takes. Even if that includes, you know, running people down with a Humvee that's all kitted out in armor.
Right.
I think it's just as valid of a storytelling technique. But around this time, we also get another workbench. And I also decided here in my playthrough, I'm just going to use what I pick up when I pick it up. There was like three bandits around, and I just threw three bombs at them. Three of those blade bombs.
Good for you.
Yeah. I was like, you know what? I'm not going to hoard stuff in this video game. I'm just going to use it if I find it. And if I don't have it,
I'm a hoarder.
Yeah. If I don't, I usually am, but I was like, my playthrough, I'm just using all the shit I got. So if I run into a bloater and all I've got is three shots in my 9mm, we'll make it work.
Ron Howard voice. He didn't.
I had a great time. I actually didn't really like, you know, I never ran into any situations where I didn't have what I needed. I think the game did a good job helping me out there. Yes. I have the note here that the way the runners scream and cry constantly, it's very upsetting.
Yeah. Well, I think there was actually a line in the original game, like the 2013 PS3 version that they took out in the remaster and has been out of every version since, where I think a runner basically said something like, I don't want to do this. I don't want to hurt you.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And then they took that out later. So at first they were like, oh, the runners are aware, but maybe they thought it was too dark.
That is
very
dark.
And that's why they took it out.
Yeah. I think it is. That's sort of changes the entire like course of the infection, like the way that story is told. I kind of think that would be cooler in sort of a dark way. But yeah, like, I think that's interesting. Very interesting.
And it was somebody you just passed by. It's not like something that's really drawn attention to. It's not like a cutscene. It's just like you hear it in the background when you're passing a runner over a person.
Yeah. Interesting. Ellie had been trying to learn how to whistle as we were progressing through this, and she eventually does get it. You get into a firefight with some hunters in the library, where Ellie expounds that she likes books and stuff. This is where you hear Endure and Survive for the first time. Ellie sees a in one of the, like a storefront as you're progressing, she sees a mannequin at a like a clothing store, and she sort of model shames her. She says, "That girl is so skinny." Like, what did people like, I thought people had plenty to eat before everything happened. And Joel is just kind of like, "Yeah, people just like looking like that then." And Ellie's just dumbfounded. She's like, "Really? That's, yeah, it's weird."
Well, I guess the dumbfoundedness comes from being so obsessed with appearance rather than just survival.
Exactly. Like, it's just, it's so alien to Ellie that people would choose this instead of survival.
Right.
It's just that, you know, the course of her being born into this world. And speaking of the old world, Joel, this is where we find out that he loves coffee, because they're in sort of a mall.
Yeah.
And also, Ellie just kind of hums and stuff the whole time. And I love it. Like, she just, they do such a good job of portraying her as a kid, even just, you know, navigating your environments. We get to a classic ladder next to a puddle ambush. And that's where a bandit sort of knocks Joel down. And in the show, this is sort of done where Joel is sort of pinned. And the only way that they were able to get out is for Ellie using a gun to kill a man. Here, Joel is a jerk, sort of like he was in the show. And Ellie, like, is very vulnerable here, and she's, like, telling Joel that it affected her, and Joel just refuses to reassure her.
Right.
Which I think is, I think it's interesting that, you know, like, she made it very clear what she, yes, she made it very clear what she needed, and he just could not do it. Couldn't help her.
Yeah. Well, again, the whole game. And maybe I'm not saying this as much because I've said it so much in the show, but the whole game is Joel resisting bonding because he's so afraid to lose somebody again. It's not just Sarah. It's recently Tess.
Yes.
And then soon it's going to be Sam and Henry.
Right. There's a bit of a shootout here where you give Ellie a gun to shoot the rifle. Well, Ellie has a rifle, and basically you got to get across this field eventually, and you're in a fight with all these raiders, basically, and so Ellie gets to have some time with a rifle. Joel tells her that humans are bigger than rats, because she has shot guns before, but they were BB guns at rats, and she does pretty okay. This is also, as we progress past this, we see the two people. There's been notes that people have been leaving. I say I didn't read them. I read some of them. And also, you're hearing it as you're sneaking around these hunters and stuff. They're talking about this couple that they've been hunting. You get to witness this couple being just ran down by this Humvee. And yeah, then you're led into this interesting section where you're basically fighting a truck. You have to, like, hide from it and get around it. And, like, it's a fun way to do a puzzle in this specific game, I think.
Yeah.
It's just sort of getting around this truck. And as we do that, we run up against Henry and Sam as we escape and sneak away from the truck. Also here, I was really taken with the elegant crafting system. So the way that they handle crafting when you're not at a workbench is there's only 6 materials. And in the different combinations of these materials is how you can craft your gear. So your medic kits, basically, your little bombs that you want to make, your stuff like that is all done through these 6 items that you can use in different ways. And I found that that system was really elegant. And sort of fun to engage with. And you can do all of it in the fly. If you are in mid fight and you find yourself short on, you know, healing resources, you can even, like, find something and then quickly put together a heal to, like, heal yourself. I think it's a really smart crafting system, and if that's something that existed in 2013, I think they crushed it.
Yeah. Yeah, no, the crafting system is definitely part of the original game. I mean, that was something that they were very famous for. And I'm glad that it sort of spread to other games after this.
Yeah, I really like that. So this is where we run up into, we actually have like a brutal fight with Henry and Sam that, you know, eventually is obviously...
Very different than the show, because Henry in the game is an actual fighter. Like, he's very good at survival. He's basically Joel in his level of skill. In fact, he surpasses Joel in some things, it seems like.
Yeah, and they really, it's really sort of an obvious Joel and Ellie parallel with Henry and Sam. More so in the game than in the show, for sure. Because, you know, I think Sam and Ellie are a lot closer in age in the game. Sam's a lot younger of a guy in the show. But yeah, they're just passersby just like us. So it's even more of a close parallel to us. So that makes it's kind of worse with what eventually happens. But they do a team up, and you know, you as you progress, you see like as you're making your way through these ruins, you're seeing a fridge decorated like a family I found, and like the letters and like, you know, the fridge letters and kids drawings and stuff. And that's just like, that's not even as you get into the sewers, which we will eventually get to. But like, they're doing such a good job with just the world around you, telling you the stories of all the people that are just fucking gone now. Very sad world. It sucks out here. There's a section with a transformer. It's not a transformer, but it's a transformer, which, you know, I think the line is, we only carry what we need. Or we only take what we need. So, you know, Sam just getting sort of hurt that he can't just have like a simple toy, which, you know, Ellie pays that off a little bit later.
You know what's funny is that this Sam is older, but this is the one that gets the toy.
That's true. He really does get it. Yeah. Sam and Ellie hit it off right away. They do that in the show too. But yeah, they hit it off. They crash, and then we wake up for a night mission. This is where we are running from the truck again, and Joel basically, the ladder gets knocked down and Joel can't get to where they are. And Henry and Sam are kind of like, we got to go. Sorry. Like, we were a team, but we got to go. Ellie hops down back into the fight, and she says, we stick together. So like, she's fully like team Joel at this point. And I thought that was just such a badass thing for her to do. Like, she was safe. She jumps back into the fray. Probably, you know, it's not a good idea. Joel probably would rather have continued with, you know, Henry and Sam, but it's just such a character, like a badass character moment where she's like, nah, fuck this. I'm going with you, Joel.
Ellie is ride or die.
She really is. Yeah. And as they're making their way through this and running from this truck, they get like up to a point where they can't go anymore because there's water. It's sort of a joke at this point that Ellie can't swim, which is,
it is basically a joke. Yeah. It's like, come on, man. How many months are you going to be with this guy before you learn how to swim?
Exactly. But, you know, another badass Ellie moment. She's like, hey, this is the only way out. We got to go. You're going to have to save me now. And she just dives into the water. Badass Ellie again. And of course, you know, as they get to that, Ellie and Joel are saved by Henry and Sam, I think. It's hard to say because basically you wash up on the water or on the beach.
Yeah. I think that it's implied strongly that Henry went and saved them.
Definitely. At this point, I noted that the Henry voice actor, I believe that was Brandon Scott, he is very good.
He is, yeah.
Yeah, very effective. The remaster of the game, like his face is just so like weathered. And it, for such a young guy, I think they did a very good job with him. And the voice actor really did convey like how hard he was fighting to get out of there. I think he did a great job. And I found an ish letter on a boat. Did you want to get into the ish stuff? Because like
I love ish.
I read a lot of the ish stuff, but this is also one of the scarier parts of the game for me. So I was more concerned with my own life.
It was pretty scary, the tunnels. But yeah, ish is a side story that you get out of the notes in the game. And again, you should be reading these notes. Don't follow Brandon's lead.
Definitely.
Follow my lead.
For sure.
Read every single note because they are really great side stories.
You are not on a deadline to record a podcast. Read the notes.
Right, exactly. The notes, so Ish's notes basically show that he realized the outbreak was happening. He went underground. He sets up this solitary safe house where he's got, you know, a food source, he got water source, he's fine, he's doing great. And then he's like, well, but I'm kind of lonely. And so he basically people watches for a while and tries to find the normies. And he looks around and he sees families and he's like, all right, the families with kids are probably fine because they're not going to go nuts on me at least. And so he starts inviting one by one little families to join him. And they form a community, and like it's a very successful community, and it's flourishing for a while. And there's a, like you see in the show too, there's a kids play area, and there's a whole like family area, and everybody's happy. And then the infected come, and they finally get into these sewers, and it's really rough because you walk into this room, this kid's room, and you see on the floor written in, I think it's blood, they didn't suffer. And you see a bunch of small bodies. And then the note says, the infected are at the door. If they are about to get in, I'll do what I have to do.
Yes. And this was a man named Kyle. Kyle got bit and had the kids in the room with him. So he had to, like, he got pinned down. And I think what he ended up doing was having to kill all the kids and then himself. So pretty rough because there is a bullet hole inside of Kyle.
Poor Kyle.
Very poor. Like, man, that's just the worst. you gotta do yourself, but first a whole room of kids. Just really rough. This world sucks. And they do such a good job of teaching you that.
Yeah. It's just like every time you're like, this is just unfortunate, right? It's not even like, that was not an evil thing to do.
No, it's
that
probably,
was honestly probably right an act thing. Of kindness.
Yeah.
But it's horrible. It's a horrible thing to do.
Yeah. Lots of scary sections through this part on top of the great environmental storytelling. There's a part where you're separated, where Ellie has to go with Henry and you are sent with Sam. Basically you're just separated by a door that falls down, video game shit. There's a very scary fight there with lurkers, which are 100% my least favorite enemy in the whole game to fight, period. Because they're kind of caught between a runner and, a clicker.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that they actually...
Do they call them lurkers in this?
They do.
Okay, because in the second one, they call them something different. I guess they are kind of different in the second one. Never mind. It's fine. Keep calling them lurkers.
So these ones, I think they can't one-hit you like the clickers do every time. These guys might, like, you might be able to fight them off, but I didn't know that, and I've never been killed by one. I've never been grabbed by one because they do a thing where if you approach them, they will run up on you. But if not, they'll kind of always hide. They're like very skittish clickers. And I hate that because they hide and like you can't pick them up on your hearing because they're lurking. So right. Like this, I had such a hard time progressing this fight. Basically what I ended up doing was using all of my bombs. I would create a little bit of noise. And this is the first bit of time that I used the tactic of throw a thing. Everything comes to it. Throw a bomb. Fight's over. But the lurkers are a little smarter than that. They don't just run straight to it because I think they can still kind of see. So
yeah,
this was a very rough fight for me. But yeah, I eventually made it. And everybody gets back together and you're making your way through like a neighborhood now. And the kids are talking about a world of uninfected and how different everything seemed. They're walking through these like homes of people that were living lives, and you find notes and, you know, just families. And they're basically talking about the world of the uninfected. Henry has a couple of things to say because he was like 5 when it all happened. So he does remember, like he said, the thing he remembered most is barbecues, like how just everybody came over and hung out. You know, another way that they're painting with bleak strokes on this.
The joys of barbecues. You never have those anymore.
Nope. Gotta love a barbecue. Well, some of these people have barbecues. I think David's crew has a couple of barbecues later.
Oh, boy. Yeah, they sure do.
So dogs are fighting in the street, which really is kind of never paid off. You just find like a couple of dogs fighting, play fighting. And when they see you, they get spooked and run off. Also, I found a note. Ish made it out, apparently. He didn't die in the sewer. There's a note in one of these houses, and Ish talks about how much it sucks that everything went down in the sewers. And that's the last Ish note I found personally.
I think that is the last one. And it's fun to find out that Ish left, but boy, was that unfortunate for the people with him.
Definitely.
He is a survivor, though.
He is. I don't think anything could take him out. He's out there somewhere, I'm sure of it.
He's a survivor.
That's right, Reba. This is the sniper section. I could not have avoided being spoiled by the show on this one. I knew it was coming. It was like, if I didn't know, I might have not. Like, it's hard to say if you didn't know, you didn't know. But you are just sort of walking into a shooting gallery here.
Yeah.
All right. So the sniper fight is a lot different in the show and in the game. So this sniper is talking mad shit. And it's kind of funny as you're, you know, obviously it's not funny for people being shot at, but the sniper is kind of fun with how he's just like talking shit to Joel and Ellie and all them.
And he's a much better shot than in the show.
Yes, much better. Eventually, as you're kind of getting through there, you get to him and you just gut the shit out of this guy. You just gut him and it's really rough. Not nearly the like sort of touching way that they handle it in the show where, you know, Joel tries to show mercy. It is not that in this case.
No.
And then we get to engage with Sniper Joel in the game. Which is pretty damn similar to the show, except it's not infected this time. It's just more bad dudes, the same bad dudes you've been fighting.
Right.
It does a sort of like a circle where you have to protect all the kids down. And as people are approaching them, you have to sort of, you know, keep them free of that.
Right.
And then there is a bit of infected that pop up, which it's like, because you're Joel. So you're you know, very far away from the action. And Joel just kind of sees it as it's happening. And it's very chilling. And eventually the infected sort of start to swarm you. And I'm like, okay, we can go now. Like, why am I still sitting at the sniper perch? But yeah, eventually everyone sort of gets out. And that section is done. You get to a little place to hold down. And Sam's looking a little sweaty.
He is a little sweaty.
I think he's probably fine. Sam and Ellie talk a little bit. Ellie explains that she's mostly an atheist. And then she produces a Transformer doll that she stole for him. An action figure. Excuse me. Which I thought was cute. I think it's cute that she stole that for him.
It is. It is. And they have this conversation that is so similar in vibe, but different than the show. Like she's really like, yeah, I don't believe in heaven. And that is hard for him to hear at the moment.
Definitely. Also brutal to hear from a kid. You know, because obviously you don't want to have, you know, you don't want kids to have to even think about death. It's just fucking brutal. But
right.
Yeah, to hear the way that these kids really have to reconcile with it, especially Sam, because he's very aware that he's going to be dealing with it. And the way it transpires differently is we get to see, as Ellie leaves the room, we get to see that he's bit, but he did not tell Ellie.
Right.
He hid it from everyone. And I have in my notes here that it was such a nice morning until it wasn't.
Well, you know, something that they said in the official podcast for the show, I think, is that part of the reason they had Ellie find out about it and then try to cure Sam was people keep asking Neil Druckmann, would Ellie's blood just be a cure? And he said, you know what? I'm just going to give an answer. No, it would not be.
Yeah. I think it was affecting as well in the show because like she was riding on such a high, I think.
Right.
And like, yeah. She thought maybe for a minute she could be a healer and she had to learn a hard lesson. But no.
Yeah.
It's all just brutal and everything sucks. The last
science ones. Isn't just mushing fluids together all the time.
Nope, not all the time. Unfortunately, sometimes it would be great if it worked out that way, but no, she's not a walking healing potion.
No.
Yeah, it's just brutal the way it ended. The confusion followed by like just the most sad that you can drag out of a human in Henry. And then just the hard cut fade to black, and then we get into the fall.
Yeah. First of all, different line from Henry in the game. He goes, "It's your fault."
Oh yeah.
And he when he's pointing the gun at Joel and so for me I was like, "Oh my god, is he going to shoot Joel?" But no, he's I don't know. I guess he was speaking to himself in the end.
Yeah. And I mean like it's easy to blame Joel because like he'd been getting by just fine without him.
Kind of. I mean everybody he was with died too.
Yeah, you just
I mean, he did get Sam out of a sticky situation. I don't know. Joel helped them as much as he maybe endangered them. So I don't think that's really fair. But you know what? Grief does funny things.
It does. Things that we and say. Like you rationalize. You try and rationalize as much as you can, and you try and get yourself out of, you know, hot water.
Right. Like, it's not my fault that I just shot my brother.
Exactly. You know, he's just trying to give himself a way out, and eventually, in his mind, he couldn't do that, which he couldn't handle. Which then he opted out, as it were.
Right.
Yeah, pretty brutal. And we don't get the coda on that either, where, you know, we get to see them burying, like in the show, we get to see them burying Henry and Sam. They allude to it later on in the fall. But it was just a hard cut to them in Wyoming, which is where we will pick back up.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, very, very hard scene. And what a note to end on. Folks, it is an hour and 50 minutes into our recording. It might not be that long in the final product, but we are pushing this night and it is getting late. So rather than give you all a 4-hour podcast, what we're going to do is we're going to split this podcast into two. And part one, you just heard. Part two is going to cover the second half of the game. And we'll also take feedback. Send it to lorehounds@thelorehounds.com or go to the contact page at thelorehounds.com/contact. Leave a voicemail or a contact form entry. We're going to do our credits in a few weeks when we record, and that will play right after this. But until then, thanks for listening here, and we're excited to talk about the rest of the game. All right, well, I think it's time for our outro quickly. Here's our Patreon shoutouts. We have a Patreon. It's a big part of the way that we support what we're doing here. You know, there's real cost to podcasting, both in time and money. And our biggest supporters, our monthly supporters, called our Lore Masters, pay $10 a month just to get a shout out, along with, you know, downloads of our music and things like that. Ad-free, early versions, the whole deal. You get everything as a Lore Master. And here's our list of thank yous, because we are so grateful for our Lore Masters and all our patrons. Samartian, Cyrus, Mark H., Michael G., Michelle E., David W., Brian P., Nick W., SC, Peter OH, Bettina W., Adam S., Nancy M., Lavinia T., Dork of the Ninjas, Duve71, who just upgraded from Lorefiend, and our newest lore master, Brian8063. Thank you to all of you. This is just a list of the time of recording. It could be different by the time that this gets released, but wow, we are so grateful for our supporters. Programming notes quickly. March Madness is over, but April is almost as crazy. We've got The Mandalorian Season 3 going. We've got Bad Batch and Visions. It might be out by the time this comes out, but we're talking about it. We're talking about that animated Star Wars stuff. Ted Lasso Season 3 is off to a great start at the time of this recording, and I'm sure it's going strong at that point. We are also covering The Earthsea Cycle with Marilyn R. Pukila. That's a book series that it's very short, you know, it's about 200 pages of book, and it's high fantasy, and yet it is a light read. So I hope you join us on our Firehose feed for that. Lastly, if you want more reading, we have Silmarillion Stories coming out this month. With our guest Mary Clay from That's What I'm Talking About. So I hope you'll all join us for that. We're going to be back on the Tolkien train again. Again, if you want ad-free and early access, go to patreon.com/lorehounds. If you want to chat with us and other like-minded community members, check out our Discord server, which you can find in our show notes. And as always, please like, rate, and review. Thanks for listening. The Lorehounds podcast is produced and published by The Lorehounds. You can send questions and feedback and voicemails at thelorehounds.com/contact. Get early and ad-free access to all Lorehounds podcasts at patreon.com/thelorehounds. Any opinions stated are ours personally and do not reflect the opinion of or belong to any employers or other entities.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.